Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
My guest today is the daughter of a garden and floral designing mother and a wildlife biologist father. Jennifer Jewell has been writing about gardening professionally since 1998, and her work has appeared in Gardens Illustrated, House and Garden, Natural Home, and Pacific Horticulture. She worked as a native plant garden curator for the Gateway Science Museum on the Chico State University campus from 2009 to 2018. Since 2016, Jennifer Jewell has written and hosted the national award-winning weekly public radio program and podcast, Cultivating Place, Conversations on Natural History and the Human Impulse to Garden. It's a co-production of North State Public Radio. Jennifer Jewell has now written a book, The Earth in Her Hands, which honors 75 extraordinary women working in the world of plants. Jennifer Jewell, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, if you don't mind, I want to go back 15 years, and I was producing a four-minute spot called Health Desk here at North State Public Radio. And one of the authors had written a book that Oprah Winfrey gave to her friends. And I thought, he lives right here in Chico, and I'll bet his neighbors don't even know about him. And I went home and looked on my bookshelf, Nancy's bookshelf.
Yeah.
And I saw another book that I'd learned about from a woman in South Dakota who told her sister here in Chico, I just read this great book, and the author lives in Chico. So I went to Joe Olekshevitz, who was then the program director, and I said, Joe, we've got some really outstanding writers here in Chico, and I'll bet nobody knows about them. We should offer a platform for local writers. And Joe was skeptical, and he said, well, okay, we'll do a pilot. And when we finished that pilot, he came dashing out of the studio and said, we're going to go with this. This program's a go. Yeah. Shortly after he green-lighted my idea, I heard him talking to somebody out here in the radio station, and I didn't know who you were at the time, but I thought, oh, somebody else is presenting a local program to Joe. So all that is a prelude to ask you about the evolution of your program here on North State Public Radio.
Well, it's a funny story, and even the name Joe O just brings such happiness to me.
It brings a smile to my face.
It does, definitely. And he was so funny. And he, of course, now lives in Oregon, the happy retired public radio life. And he – so when I first moved here with my family in 2007, I was transitioning, in my head at least, to – moving away from writing about gardens in glossy magazines. And
you were moving here from?
I moved here from Colorado. We were living in the Loveland-Fort Collins area, which is north, sort of central Colorado. It feels very much like the North State. It is a higher elevation, but it's dry and hot in the summer. It is snowy in the winter. There's a lot of agriculture, a rich agricultural tradition, also at the CSU Colorado, which is Colorado State University, Fort Collins. And I had come to Chico for my husband's work, my husband at the time's work, and I knew I wanted to do something than write about gardens for glossy magazines, that it was so tied to how gardens looked or how gardeners looked that it was missing some of the heart and soul of what gardening was in my experience. And when I first arrived in Chico, I want to say maybe 2 weeks in, I heard a PSA on North State Public Radio, looking for PSA writers, volunteer writers. And I thought, well, I'm a writer and I'm new to this town and I love public radio. Public radio might be just the ticket for what I want to do. So I, you know, kind of steeled up my courage and I came into the station and I said, I would be very happy to be a volunteer PSA writer, but I have to be honest, I am mostly interested in producing a garden program, and you don't seem to have one, and I'm the person to give it to you. Now, I didn't know Joe O at the time, but it was Joe O I was talking to. And he later related to me that he was like, this lady is just like Mary Tyler Moore. And and he said, and I am a lot like her editor, Lou. Lou Grant. And then he would mimic the way Joe O loved to do. He would say, And she's so perky, Mary Tyler Moore, and I don't like perky. And we got along really well. So he took a chance on me. He said, sort of skeptically, as you just related, do you really think you have enough material for a whole year? And I said, I think I've got you covered. And
he
you know,
had that same concern with me. He thought I was going to run out of authors.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so we recorded a good many programs before the first one aired. And I think that reassured him, okay, yeah, there are enough writers here. We can continue this program.
Yeah. And what, now it's been, you know, 15 years for you and 12 for me. And it is, it's a testament to the richness of our area, I think, because mine, of course, started locally as well. But it was the seeds in that first program, In a North State Garden, that led me to understand that my instincts were right, that the richness and intersectionality of the gardeners and growers in the North State were a microcosm.
I don't think you've mentioned the name of your program when you started it.
Yeah.
Was In a North State
Garden.
In a
North State Garden. And it focused, in a very similar way to Cultivating Place, it focused on the people doing really interesting things in horticulture, agriculture, growing of any kind in our 10-county area. And it definitely demonstrated to me the power of gardens and gardeners to affect positive change in our world.
And your program also started out as 4 minutes. And my experience with doing a 4-minute spot is much more difficult than doing a half hour or an hour, because you really have to get your point across and you have very little time to do it.
Very little time. It's like that great adage about writing. If you want to be a writer, write a novel. If you want to be a good writer, write an essay. If you want to be a very good writer, write a poem. And that 4-minute sort of haiku of what you're trying to get to is very good discipline for distilling down the essence of somebody or a book or a topic. Yeah.
My guest is Jennifer Jewell, and she hosts an award-winning program here on North State Public Radio, and its name now is Cultivating Place, Conversations on Natural History and the Human Impulse to Garden. So what is the theme of this program? I think you've been telling us your program, and what would you in a nutshell say is the theme of your program?
It is about the intersection between gardening as a human impulse, which is so incredibly universal across time and space for all peoples, and the natural history of their place. So the importance and the necessity of working with your climate, with your soils, with your water, with your native plants, not solely, not as a puritanical kind of paradigm, but as a necessity for being successful and cultivating a love for this thing that we call growing. And that, I think, is the primary mission, you know, sort of theme of the program, if you will. But its next ripple out from there is how that intersects with all of our everyday lives in every way you can conceive of, in how we see the world, how we think about economy and environment and community and social and individual well-being is all tied up into these two things coming together.
You know, you use the word impulse, and that's really what was behind me in presenting my idea to Joe, because I really didn't know what form the program would take. I just knew I wanted to give a platform to local writers, and I didn't have any idea what form I wanted the program to have, but I just knew there was something urging me, do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that was also, you had some impulse behind your idea to say, you know, this is something I got to do.
Yeah, it definitely was. There was a very strong calling to me that if I was going to write and continue to communicate about gardens, that I didn't want to be complicit in commodifying gardens as a luxury lifestyle destination or object you could pick up at the local store. I wanted to talk with other people about how important it was to them, because I think everyone that I know, and I think this is true of writers that you interview, Nancy, that it isn't necessarily a choice. You don't wake up and say, oh, I think I'm going to be a writer. Rather, it calls you to do this thing. Most gardeners I know, if you said to them, why do you garden? And I had an aunt of mine who was a professional head gardener at Ash Lawn, which is the historic home of James Monroe outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. So a really just very rich historic landscape. And she said, it's like asking me why I breathe. I couldn't not do it. And I think most gardeners feel that exact same strength of, and I didn't want to say instinct perhaps, because I think sometimes people start and they don't know why they're starting or, but I, you know, impulse is the word that came to mind for the title, but, and some people say it's genetic, I don't know, but it calls you. It definitely calls you, this gardening, growing, plant love thing. And then it really pulls you into a love for the entire ecosystem that is the, you know, top 10 inches of our beautiful planet.
It doesn't surprise me that you were interested in gardening from a young age.
Yeah.
I mean, I have loved books all my life. I can remember when I did not love books. And so this was something that I enjoyed doing, too, because Joe gave me total freedom to choose the authors the way I did it. He guided me because I didn't know the whole process of being on radio. I had been on radio for a while. But I remember the day when I said, Joe, what do you think of? And he said, what are you asking me for? And that was his way of cutting me loose, saying, okay, you've served your apprenticeship. Now you're on your own. Mm-hmm. Did you come to a point with your garden show?
Well, I was, I will always be grateful to Joe, and I remain eternally grateful to North State Public Radio, but public radio period, for their not only willingness, but their encouraging of voices of all kinds to discuss things that matter to us in open and uncurated ways, so that I had that same experience that nobody has ever said to me, oh, you should interview this person because they're a sponsor. You should interview this person because they're big. It has always been, just tell us who you're going to interview and tell us what you're going to talk about. I remember I got my hand slapped once by our former director, whom I loved, Brian Terhorst, when I was a little too enthusiastic about a smoked paprika from a local grower. And I guess it caused a like run on smoked paprika in a local store. And so it felt like an endorsement of the product.
Yes.
But so I try to be careful about that. But I am, as you are, just naturally enthusiastic about what all of these people are doing. And you just want the world to know about these sources of positivity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm careful because I don't want people to think this is a show about selling books.
Right.
In fact, when I was coming up with a name for my show, there was a program at the time called Opera Addict. Joe said, well, what about Nancy's bookseller? He was thinking C-E-L-L-A-R.
Oh, right.
And no, absolutely not, because I'm not here to S-E-L-L books.
Yeah, right.
So, but like you, I want to put forth something that is important. And in my life, I've always felt like a teacher. And I thought, wow, I've got the whole Northern California as a classroom. I can bring in people who have something to teach us. And that's one of the things I love about your book, Jennifer. Let me tell listeners the name of your book again, The Earth in Her Hands, 75 Extraordinary Women Working in the World of Plants. And I find it so inspiring on a lot of levels. And you actually didn't have an idea of writing a book, right? You're just doing a radio show. And what happened?
Well, Timber Press, a horticultural publisher out of they're based in Portland, Oregon. They're an imprint of Workman Publishing, which is out of the Northeast. But they came to me in December of 2017 and said, would you be interested in writing a book about women in horticulture? And I was a little nervous, and it was hard to conceive of writing a book and continuing to produce Cultivating Place full time. Because as anyone knows, it sounds like a part-time job and it eats your life in a very beautiful way. You know, it's something I love to do. But I ultimately took it on and was really excited. We, as a group, myself and the publishers, came up with the final parameters, which were And this was in part just to narrow down how were you going to pick women and how were you going to write about them. And I said to the publisher that I really wanted to handle the book in the same way that I handle my Cultivating Place program, and that is to focus on people doing really intersectional work, showing how, you know, just a home gardener or a grower or a floral designer can, in fact, be intersecting with, you know, economy and environment and cultural health and well-being. So there are 75 women, which is just a kind of a random number of what I could accomplish in a year, doing interesting things in all areas of horticulture. So that's floral design and landscape architecture and soil science and environmental science broadly.
Even photographers?
Photographers and writers and public administrators and policymakers, seed keepers and herbalism and health in plants. And it was focusing on women who were working as their livelihood and careers in these areas to, in part, demonstrate where there's a lot of representation in women, where there is less representation with women, and the kinds of work that they were finding important. And so they're all living, and their work has really come to the fore in the past 25 years. So those were the parameters, and it was a lot of fun to research.
My guest is Jennifer Jewell, radio host and now author. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Jennifer Jewell, whose new book is The Earth in Her Hands. And I mentioned that you include photographers because I was so impressed with the photographs in your book, the clarity and the consistency, because these women are all over the world. Mm-hmm. But you have photographs that there's a consistency of the photographs.
That is a tribute, really, to the team at Timber Press. Because we only had a year and because there was no travel budget, so I interviewed the same way you and I will often interview for our programs, which was remotely. And I will say, as an aside, there was something about interviewing the women remotely that was okay with me, because I think you will recognize what I'm saying when I say that when you are interviewing someone with only their voice as your guide, you listen in a very distinctive way and you hear intonation and emotional levels that you don't get when you are seeing someone in person and watching their face and their body language. And so it was a really, it was a very rich experience to interview them remotely. And now I lost track of the question.
Well, I was telling about the quality of,
of the photographs
in your
right.
book.
So here was what was interesting. I love to take photographs, but I couldn't take photographs of all of these women where they were. And so there is an enormous number of photographers who are represented here. And it was the design and art team at the publishing house who collected all the photos from these many women all over the world and then worked to make them consistent. And I will say that a friend of mine said to me, "You look at them and the consistency is that they are all glowing." And I said, "I think that's the nature of their work and their belief in its importance."
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Even tactily, your book, if you rub your fingers over the cover, you could see that there's an almost a third dimension
to
the cover.
Yes, it's very textural, which is nice, which is beautiful. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the energy of these women and just comes through from their photographs. And a friend of mine whose wife loved to garden and said it just changed her energy. She'd go out in that garden. When she came back, she was almost a different person.
Yes.
So happy. And gardens can be so healing.
Yeah, they really can be. You know, I think that there is certainly a place wherein gardening and gardeners have been part of some of the troubles in our world, whether that's chemical use or degrading of soil, removing native plants and replanting with non-native plants that don't serve the habitat. But I would say, by and large, gardeners are people who want to nurture life. And by and large, they are a great contribution to our environments, both environmentally and socially. And I think more and more, as there is a wider and more accurate collective consciousness about how we treat soil, how we treat water, how we support habitat, gardeners are ever more important agents of change. Yeah.
Well, you have apparently, you ask each of these women who inspired them.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved reading those because, for example, one that I appreciated, our past First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Because she helped kids see, here's a vegetable garden. Here's where your food comes from. And so I was delighted to see somebody mention a school, and this was Ava Bynum, to specify who this was. And she is involved in school garden projects. Mm-hmm. And she, one of the women that inspired her was Michelle Obama for that reason. And yesterday at your book signing, you had a lady there who is teaching kids composting and gardening.
Yeah.
An old friend of mine. And I was just so delighted that here in the community, there are people working to teach children about gardening.
Yeah.
Now, another person that came up a lot, I think I counted four or five times, Rachel Carson was listed as a woman who inspired these women gardeners.
Now, I'm going to go back a little bit to your referencing of Michelle Obama and her being a model and inspiration to Ava Bynum. I think that not only did she hold up the value of a vegetable garden, but she also said this vegetable garden is far more important than an over-manicured, overfed, underused green lawn on the property of the White House. And that right there was an incredibly powerful symbol of what is valuable and what we hold as priority in our world. And if I had been able to interview more people, I would have included, you know, I would have begged and borrowed and stolen to interview Michelle Obama or Oprah Winfrey or Martha Stewart, people who have modeled to our collective consciousness that this is not just a nice thing to do. This is a necessary and powerful activity that we as humans engage in for our own food and for the nurturing of other life on the planet as well. So the next question was?
Well, you know, I was thinking back, both of my sets of grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
They were not, gardening was not their occupation. One was a doctor, another one had a store, but they had vegetable gardens behind their houses.
Yeah. And you were saying this about Rachel Carson. And so that right there, I think, is the connector between how we garden is. I think sometimes people hear the word garden and they think of that vegetable plot in the summer. But of course, there are so many ornamental gardeners and habitat gardeners and native plant gardeners that have nothing to do with feeding ourselves or having this space serve us, but in putting it out there to serve the broader world. And you are right. Rachel Carson is one of the most referenced inspirations in the book. And she had nothing to do with vegetables. She had everything to do with how does how we treat the land around us then feed into the rest of the other than human, the more than human lives on the planet. And what she realized as a marine biologist who then became, you know, an iconic conservationist was that we were harming our world and our songbirds specifically in orders of magnitude that were devastating.
Because that was the title of her book, Silent Spring.
That's exactly right. And so her one woman's voice, having researched and become aware of this one impact, made an incredible difference to how we think about cultivating the space around us, agriculturally and individually.
You know, her book came out shortly before I became a freshman in college, and we were assigned her book to read. And I just think that, wow, the situation has gotten so much more dire since her book came out.
It really has. And I think that this is part of the urgency of my program and why we care about these things, because it has gotten worse. We were able to ban DDT, but the agro-industrial chemical complex has just simply created products that are different enough from DDT that they aren't banned, and it takes a long time to get them banned, and they are equally harmful under the guise of being helpful. And I think people are kind of sold a bill of you have to produce this much food, and it has to look this good, and it has to be this perfect, and so you need to use this chemical to kill off the moths or beetles or whatever it might be that's making them look less than this way or making you produce slightly less than this much. And that comes back to our values and priorities, Nancy, and what we as consumers vote with when we spend a dollar, and what we ask for from our agricultural farming friends and industries.
Now, since you were mentioning pest control, I was struck by this Vandana Shiva. Yeah. And this lady is an international environmental health and social justice advocate in India. And her plant, apparently you ask them, well, what's your favorite plant? I'm not sure if you worded the question that way. And so that was another thing that I was interested in. One lady said dandelion. And I thought, yes, I love dandelion. I mean, they come up in my yard, but I sometimes, if I feel like I'm lacking in leafy greens, I'll pluck some dandelion leaves. But now what Ms. Shiva said, she picked neem. And I was already familiar with neem because it's an ingredient in toothpastes, or even better, you chew on the twig of neem. And so what I noticed that I learned something about neem that you can use the bark, for example, to keep your teeth healthy, and an ingredient in toothpaste, but you would not use neem oil. And here's what this lady says. She picked neem. The name is derived from the Persian and means free tree. After the Bhopal disaster, when a Union Carbide pesticide factory killed thousands, I started a campaign, No More Bhopals, Plant a Neem, to promote the use of neem in nonviolent pest control. 10 years later, I discovered that neem was patented by W.R. Grace in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. For 11 years, we fought against the biopiracy of neem. We won. Neem, the free tree, is free.
Yeah. Vandana Shiva is an iconic voice in this movement to cultivate our spaces with consciousness for the land, the humans, the soil, and wildlife. And she is an outspoken advocate for the traditional ecological knowledge of the growers in India and their traditional methods before the Green Revolution, before this idea that they could grow significantly more food using these new Green Revolution technologies of specific seed with specific fertilizer, with specific chemical pest controls, which degraded the soil and ultimately created this dependency loop between the gardener growers and the people selling them the seed and the fertilizer and the pest controls. And it is a tangled mess of no ultimate benefit to the people or the country. And she is a hero and continues to be an outspoken voice for women and traditional ways of growing and tending the land.
So this neem plant can provide neem oil for pest control.
That's exactly right.
But next time I shop for toothpaste, I'm going to look for neem ingredient
exactly.
in toothpaste. Thanks for her reminder. You mentioned people from, well, for example, she's from India. You had a lot of people from Australia. And there was a lady who was inspired by by Lady Bird Johnson. This was a lady who lives in Austin, Texas. And she said that Lady Bird Johnson, as we spoke of Michelle Obama as being an inspiring first lady. And why was Lady Bird Johnson, why would she pick Lady Bird Johnson as an inspiring gardener?
So Andrea DeLong Amaya, who is actually my guest on the program this month, the month of March, Women's History Month, in which I sort of focus on four different women in the book over the course of my episodes. Andrea DeLong Amaya is the director of horticulture at the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center. The Wildflower Center is one of the leading native plant research centers in our country today and collaborates globally with other conservation and native plant research institutions. Lady Bird Johnson, during her tenure as First Lady, was very concerned with highway beautification and the importance of native plants for pollinators and for beauty across our country, and that each place should look like itself, that Maine should look like Maine, and that Texas should look like Texas. And so she undertook as her project for First Lady this Highway Beautification Act, which then went on to become the impetus for the founding of this research center, which is part of the University of Texas at Austin. And they are doing remarkable work in native plant research, introduction, and restoration.
My guest is Jennifer Jewell, who is host of a program here on North State Public Radio called Cultivating Place. And her book is The Earth in Her Hands. And some of the questions you ask each of your 75 ladies that you selected, who inspired them, what their favorite plant was. And one that surprised me was Frances Palmer said that Eudora Welty inspired her. And I thought, Eudora Welty, she's a writer, but she was also a gardener.
Also a gardener, yes. And just to clarify, so you would never ask a gardener what's your favorite plant. Oh. They would say, what? That's like asking you who is your favorite child.
Yes.
So the question that I posed was, do you have a plant or a landscape that speaks to you in a specific way in regard to the qualities you want to sort of project into this world or that you think represent you in some way? And then the other question was actually a two-part question, and it was as a way of kind of expanding beyond just 75 women and demonstrating that none of us stand alone. We are all part of a network, whether they are, you know, standing on the shoulders of the giants who came before us or the young people that are going to come up behind us and push our work, whatever it may be, forward further. And so I asked women, can you name two women who came before you that you find inspiring or who inspired you? And can you name two women who are coming up, no matter what age they are, but coming up in this work, who you think the world should know more about? And people, as you say, mentioned Rachel Carson. They mentioned Martha Stewart and Michelle Obama. And Constance Spry came up quite a bit. And sometimes they would mention very personal people, like their grandmother or their aunt. And other times they would mention well-known people. And sometimes they would mention people that you wouldn't think of, such as Eudora Welty, who was a beautiful gardener and had a strong sense, like, you know, a little bit like the Virginia Woolf and Vanessa Bell and Vita Sackville-West Bloomsbury group, had this sort of holistic aesthetic with literature and arts and gardening as one of the arts.
After a break, I'll be back with author Jennifer Jewell, who has written a book honoring women working in the world of plants. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. Thank you. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with radio host and author Jennifer Jewell. Well, you know, in anticipation of talking to you about your book, I asked a gardener that I know. His primary job is he takes care of a paraplegic, but he loves gardening, and he is so, I'm sure he was a painter also, because his lettering, when he labels what he's planted in the garden, and he prints it on broken pieces of terracotta, so shards, and it's so neat. And so I said one day, Jimmy, who taught you gardening? Because that's not what he mainly does. And he named three people. All three were women. Mm-hmm. He named his mother, his stepmother, and his sister.
Yeah, yeah.
As having encouraged and taught him about gardening.
Yeah. I think it is often, it is very much a pass along knowledge and craft and set of skills. And very often it comes from the women in a community or a circle of people, families, or other groups. Yeah.
Well, there was a quote that I liked by this woman with a really long name, Mila Vera Tullia Prince.
Yes.
And under her inspiring women, she mentioned grandmothers, women, and she spells women, I'm sure this was on purpose, W-O-M-X-N.
Yes.
She mentions grandmothers, women with folk remedies for any ailment, mighty kitchen gardens, and simple herbal healing knowledge. Now, here's her quote. My grandmother communicated directly with plants. Her windowsill was covered in geraniums. She would chat with them daily as she watered them, pinching off old leaves and making sure they were well nourished.
Yeah. Mila Prince is a wonderful healer and medicinal plant grower. And she has a very strong focus on encouraging people to connect to their own plant ways and plant traditions, rather than taking on another culture's plant ways and claiming them as your own. And she does beautiful work in this way, in connecting each of us back to what another woman in the book, Yolanda Burrell, who owns Pollinate Farm and Garden in Oakland, she says, we all come from growing roots somewhere. This might be six generations back, it might be one generation back, but somewhere along the way, someone in our bloodline had to grow their own food in order to survive, had to find their own plant medicine and floral beauty in order to live their life. And so it's not a question of learning it, it's a question of relearning it and re-remembering it and re-embracing it to make life fuller now.
You know, I think people who might say, oh, talk to plants.
Right.
The plant can't understand what you're saying. But I think if you look at it from the other side, look what it does for the person to be speaking in loving, compassionate ways to, even if it's a creature that you don't think, well, that plant does, that geranium doesn't know she's talking to it. Mm-hmm. But look what it does for her as she has these loving feelings projected to these plants. Just like you were mentioning, these women in these photographs just emit such a beautiful energy.
Mm-hmm. And energy, I think that's what it comes down to, is that we say, and it's very easy to dismiss someone and say, oh, that's just hocus pocus. What do you mean? You know, of course the plant doesn't talk back. And I would disagree. You know, as a college-educated, perfectly bright person, I would disagree wholeheartedly that everything is energy. And just as we were talking about sound and how you can hear in a person's voice things that they aren't actually saying to you, so too you can communicate and learn from the plants around you in everything that they're doing, from how they're changing color to whether they look dry or, you know, fully hydrated, to how they have shaped themselves in response to the wind or the soil. They are telling us information all the time.
And, you know, you just said how important energy is, because it's hard for me. Sometimes people are kind of puzzled by my diet, the way I eat, and it's hard to convey. My choices are dictated by the energy in the food. I wouldn't eat a paper napkin. There's no energy in a paper napkin, but yet a lot of what is labeled as food has as much energy as a paper napkin. So I try to get as close to the earth, if that's the way I want it, the energy in something that I eat. Some grocery stores here, we have nice vegetables, but I go to the farmer's market. I want it really fresh. And when I'm really happy, I get it straight out of my friend's garden. I mean, I snip off the spinach leaves, take it upstairs, and cook it right there. And I am just so delighted. And it's hard to get that idea across that that's an important question when you ask yourself. I have a friend who, he's Harvard educated. Just like, he's no dummy. But when I mentioned eating seasonally, he said, well, what do you mean by eating seasonally? And it just, I thought, oh my gosh, if he doesn't go by that, then we really need to help children, starting with children, to understand if it's not asparagus season, don't eat asparagus till asparagus season. Then eat, I overdose on asparagus when it's in season. I don't eat it when it's not. Tomatoes, love it when tomato season comes, but I don't eat them when it's not tomato season. And all of that is because I want something that is so vibrant that I'm wasting my time to eat dead food.
Yeah. One of the women in the book, Dr. Elaine Ingham, who's also a guest on Cultivating Place this month, is a soil scientist, and her work articulated or began to articulate the age-old intuitive understanding that the soil is alive with so much diversity of, you know, fungi and bacteria and all kinds of microorganisms, and we don't even know what they all do. But what we do know is that they are important, and we know what a lot of them do. One of the things she pointed out to me in our interview process was that idea of the eating seasonally and eating as locally as you can, that there are important antioxidants and inoculants in our local soil that produce the local food that you eat, and that food comes complete with the enzymes needed for us to actually digest the food effectively and take up the nutrients that are on it. She explained that pears are a perfect example of this, that the soil-borne life is all across the skin of a pear, and everything that you need to process that pear effectively is on that skin. And it's one of the reasons that pears are the least allergenic foods that we have, among the least allergenic foods we have. And it's why babies are introduced to pear as early as, you know, it's among their earliest foods. And it's because they come built in with everything you need to process them. And that's when you become aware of how the food that we eat feeds our bodies, completely colonizes our guts and immune systems. And if it's not coming from healthy living soil, then it's coming from something else. And so do you really want your body to be part of soil that isn't as healthy as it can be?
My guest is Jennifer Jewell, and she hosts a program here on North State Public Radio, Cultivating Place. But now she's an author, The Earth in Her Hands, 75 Extraordinary Women Working in the World of Plants. I enjoyed when you mentioned, I won't say their favorite plant because you worded it very tactfully. But for example, there was a lady in Mill Valley who chose daphnes.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yes, I love those little daphnes.
Love them. Love them. Yeah. Michelle Slatala is the emeritus editor of Gardenista, which is a major online gardening resource. And she is a wonderful gardener in Mill Valley, came from the Northeast, and I believe she's now writing for the Wall Street Journal. And she still does Gardenista to some extent, but is also, I think, working on a different book. And she said that fragrance in the early spring, when the daphne, whether no matter which species you have, but for us primarily would be Daphne odora, and that I think is what she's referring to, is just, it's so evocative. And over gardeners will say, and the women in the book are among them, that fragrance is one of those triggers that bring on such vivid recall, and I think are probably very strongly associated with the healing powers of plants, you know, whether that's aromatherapy specifically or that happy trigger of, you know, I smell daphne and I remember my mother cutting a sprig and putting it on my bedside table in Beaufort, South Carolina when I visited. And so it's my mom to me. And right there, I feel better.
Well, there were things that jumped out at me just because mm-hmm. of my personal history. And, for example, this lady you just mentioned, Michelle Slatula, she studied journalism and English at my old alma mater.
Oh, good.
Indiana University. And that she also was in a photograph with Molly Katzen.
Yes.
And I became a vegetarian so many years ago that it was kind of odd to be a vegetarian at that time. But Molly Katzen had a cookbook for vegetarians. And you have a photograph of this lady in Mill Valley with Molly Katzen.
Yeah. The Moosewood Cookbook is, I think, iconic for many, many home gardeners. Yeah.
And I still have my copy where I would pencil in the first time I would try a recipe, I would write in the date. And it's heartwarming to look back at those dates when I would first prepare that recipe. Another time it was personal for me was I came across one lady said she liked holly and in parentheses, ilex. And I thought, yeah, because the hometown I grew up in, there were people who were very interested in gardening. They took care of the flowers. My hometown was so many flowers. And I thought, yeah, when they built this movie house, they named the movie house Ilex. So somebody knew
right.
what the name was for a holly.
Yeah. The genera name. It can be important because, of course, we put holly next to a lot of other plants. And so that common name, Latin name confusion can sometimes help us out.
And I'm sure other readers of your book, there will be something personal that will jump out at them and bring back memories or just give them a warm feeling to read your book.
I hope so, because I think, you know, just like reading literature, music, cooking, gardening is one of the things we as humans do to be our most human self. And so I would be surprised if most people don't find a personal resonance with one or more of the women in the book.
Well, the one lady, Christian Wickert, picked as one of her inspiring women, Jane Goodall. And I thought, well, yeah, but plants? Jane Goodall worked with animals. She was loved the simians. And I didn't know. This lady said that Jane Goodall, because she was a conservationist of botanical habitat.
Yeah.
I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Because the creatures she loves and studies primarily cannot exist out of their ecosystem. And that is where I think the gardening impulse ties into just an overwhelming care for the planet as a whole in almost all cases. And if you understand the love you have in your garden, you start to put it together with the fact that it is an important link in the environmental chain.
Well, there was a lady in Japan, Midoro Shintani, who picked as one of her inspiring women a Japanese chef and culinary educator.
Yeah.
I thought, oh boy, am I glad to see that somebody who, after it's grown, honors that food item, vegetable, whatever it is. And so I was happy to see that she picked a chef and a culinary educator.
Yeah. And I don't know if you went down the rabbit hole of researching that chef and culinary educator, but she's fascinating. And, you know, and then you're sort of like, oh, and then one leads to another, to another, to another. It's a beautiful web.
I didn't give her name. Yoshiko Tatsumi, if somebody wants to look her up. Because that is, I'm kind of a failed gardener, Jennifer. There are times when I thought, yes, yes, I'm going to be a gardener. My husband and I, during our back to earth phase, we moved to the Appalachian Mountains. We had this huge garden. My husband did all the work. I think I went out and said, oh, yeah, it looks like the strawberries are ripe now, or the spinach. And I would come out, and then that's when I got excited, take it out of the garden and bring it into the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so a few years ago, I said, okay, I'm going to have a garden. I'm going to have raised beds. My husband built me raised beds. I had a garden 1 year. And I just am all the more appreciative of the people who do grow the feed that I eat. I am just so grateful. I sit down and think, oh, Jimmy raised the spinach. And I am so grateful to the people who do, since I'm a failure as a gardener.
Well, and see, this is what I would say. I would say you were not a failure of a gardener. You are not an active gardener. You are a gardener by association, because we all are. No matter how many people want to garden, there are those people who don't necessarily want to do the work of the gardening, the activity of the gardening, but we are all gardeners by association, just as we are all farmers by association. And so then you have to choose which kind of gardener you're going to be, which kind of farmer you're going to be, Nancy.
So now when I look out my window and see those empty raised beds.
Yeah, you should say, Jimmy, come over and plant my beds too.
Well, you must have, in all this research that you did, have things that stood out for you. People, what they did. Who inspired you? I mean, I'm sure it was like me. There was so much inspiration here.
It was, you know, what stood out for me the most, Nancy, was, it sort of goes back to the, like, what's your favorite plant? I fell so deeply in love with each of these 75 women and their inspirations and their recommendations for who we should see coming up, that the strongest takeaway for me was that in spending 2 full years, and now I've got another one coming up, talking about the book and meeting people, is they gave me more hope than I have had in such a long time. And so even while we're, you know, we as people, and this isn't just this political cycle, it's all the time. We often look for leadership from above, whatever that above might be. And the fact is that there are leaders on the ground planting the world we want to see every day, all the time. And it's up to us, gardeners by association, to see them and to acknowledge them and to amplify their work, because they are modeling a leadership that is caring for all the life around them. It is modeling a leadership that is based on horizontal collaboration and affirmation and encouragement. And that is a leadership that our country, our world, needs so much more of all the time.
I love hearing you say that, Jennifer. I really do, because I get discouraged sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell people again the name of your book, The Earth in Her Hands, 75 Extraordinary Women Working in the World of Plants. And the full title of her program is Cultivating Place, Conversations on Natural History and the Human Impulse to Garden. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure to chat with you.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.